With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public, free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom, and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome to a very special RCR Offline, Off the Books, Off to the Races panel again here on social media. Joining me today, it's time to talk about the CAS report. This dropped just before we went off air. We'd only just touched on it. We wanted to actually get our teeth into it a little bit more. So I've gathered a really good collection of people that I thought we could have a great discussion about the CAS report and what is going on currently in the state of gender medicine, not only in the wider international sphere, but also here at home. Now, this discussion and panel is going to be broken up into three parts. So if you hear this first part, make sure you hunt out parts two and parts three. So they will all be going on. And also, too, thank you to everyone that has supported us so far in our fundraising efforts. A little bit more confident after a week or so, and I'm saying when and not if. So keep going. We're aiming to be super positive about this, that we want to be back on the air soon. So joining me today in my panel, I have got Bob McCrosbury from Family First. Hey, Bob, welcome back to RCR.
How are you? Good to be here.
Good to have you. And then Jan Rivers from GenSpect. Jan, it's so good to have you and meet you finally myself. Welcome along.
Oh, great. Thank you. And thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome. And Sarah Henderson from Manawahine Kōrero. And see, we need to get back on air, Sarah, because I know you and I need to do Midwifery Council Part 2. But until then, welcome along to discuss this topic today. Thanks. Good to see you, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks very much, Marie. Yeah.
So as I said before, the CAS report has dropped. There is a lot to unpack with this. So Jan, what are some of the headline and significant findings of this report in the field of, in inverted commas, gender medicine that we need to know about?
Oh, well, thank you. So if we go right back to basics, what's happened here is that this has been a four-year review, an independent review commissioned by the National Health Service, and the head of that review was Hilary Cass, an experienced paediatrician, and they have been working over 4 years to review the status of gender medicine for children and young people in the UK. And it initially came about partly after a court case where a young woman was found to have been treated despite it not being in her best interest. That was the Keira Bell case. So some of the real big headlines for me are just the enormous scale of this work. 4 years. The final report runs to 388 pages. That's 80 more pages than the paper, the Beveridge report, which actually set up the National Health Service in the first place. But not only there is that report, it's associated with half a dozen systemic reviews of different aspects of gender medicine, plus a couple of reviews of the quality of gender medicine standards worldwide. And so there's a huge amount of work. The work was given to York University, which is a leading university in the world in evidence-based medicine. If I just one more thing, the review of the different gender medicine guidelines actually found that our own guideline, created in New Zealand by the Professional Association of Transgender Health Aotearoa, came 22nd out of 23 in the listing. So it's not a high quality document by any means. It had a score of zero for one of the six elements and a score of 12 for another. So we're not talking about a document that really is fit for purpose.
So this report, of course, has sent ripples through the establishment in the United Kingdom. The NHS came out very, very quickly in response to this. So, Bob, do you think that the winds of change are with the NHS were really looking for something to give them justification to be able to continue the pathway that they have after the closing of Tavistock? Or what are your thoughts around that?
Well, I think the initial report said that they should do something about puberty blockers, and so they did put a pause on those. But some of the statements, let me just read a couple of statements. Jan's given us a fantastic introduction to how we got to this point. Some of the key conclusions in the document said that puberty blockers should no longer be prescribed to children, except in the context of research due to the powerful drug's effect on brain development and bone health. Which, of course, we've never been told in New Zealand. We've had doctors on Sunday program who are connected to PATHA saying, you know, fully reversible, not really much of an issue. It says cross-sex hormones should be prescribed only to 16 and 17-year-olds with extreme caution, but they actually say basically you should wait until they're 18 when hopefully they have a bit more nous as to what decisions they're actually making and what effect it'll have. And then it says that the report makes quite clear that most of the young people that are being referred to these clinics are coming not only with gender confusion, but they're also coming with other presenting problems, high rates of abuse, neglect, sexual abuse, parental substance abuse, and also mental health conditions. And there was three other just quick statements. It said the rationale for the use of puberty blockers is unclear. There's weak, poor evidence of its impact on gender dysphoria and mental or psychosocial health, and the effect on cognitive and psychosexual development remains unknown. And this is the kind of the summary of the whole report. If I was to summarise it, it would be this paragraph. For most young people, a medical pathway, i.e. a medical transition, will not be the best way to manage their gender-related stress. Even for young people where a medical pathway is clinically suggested, it isn't enough and does not negate the need to address wider mental health and psychosocial challenges. And just finally, the report does completely destroy the suicide trope, which is usually what's used to manipulate parents who really don't know what to do, and they're told by professionals who should know better, do you want a dead daughter or a live son? In other words, if you don't do what your child is asking, they will commit suicide. Or if, you know, if you don't adhere to their every whim, then they're going to commit suicide. And what the report said was young people facing gender-related distress had no significantly different levels of suicide risk to other people with similar levels of complex presentations. And there is no evidence that gender-affirming treatment reduces suicide risk. Now, we'd actually already had that confirmed with that earlier study from Finland just 2 weeks ago that talked about the fact that, in fact, post-surgery and post-transitioning, the suicide risk was just as high. And look, it's no surprise to any of us who are thinking through this issue, because we realise that with the gender dysphoria comes other comorbid disorders. And you know, it's better to heal the mind than cut the body. So the CAS report basically backed up what we're all saying. The interesting thing, I think, which Jan may agree with, is that some of the legacy media are finally waking up. It's only a few of them, but finally.
Well, both Radio New Zealand and Newstalk ZB have covered it, so I was shocked and stunned. Yep. And they covered it for them relatively well. So, yeah, it is certainly baby steps. And like Sarah, one of the things with the report, I mean, it was a huge report, as Jan outlined, but there is so much to cover. And there are, like everything, this report is beginning to set change and pathways in motion, but there are still some gaping holes that haven't yet been addressed, and you've been able to identify some of those. So what are some of the things that those who have been critical of the space do still need to continue to pop a spotlight on?
Thanks, Marie. Yeah. So in broadly speaking, I agree with Bob and Jan that the CAS report is comprehensive. It's commissioned by a reputable, well-known, high trust institution that has benefits for us here in New Zealand and in the Commonwealth and Anglosphere generally, because the NHS and the UK processes and parliamentary systems and so on are relevant to us here as well. And I think that that's part of the reason, you know, the groundwork has been laid by Bob, by Jen, by Jen Specht, by Manawahine Korero, and by others who've been pushing back for a really long time. The legacy media is certainly aware that this is an issue. And the CAS report seems to have given them some permission to talk about it openly. And I know, you know, anecdotally that it's making its way outside of the anti-woke media bubble, which is really, really good. I'm really pleased about that, and I'm really pleased to see that they've put the pause on the puberty blockers. But where I have concerns is that the language that is employed in the report doesn't address the fact that, in fact, gender medicine and gender-affirming care and gender generally as a concept, it's still using this language that is really obfuscating the issue and the comorbidities that these children are presenting with are, in fact, the greater part of their problems. And, you know, I completely agree with Bob as well. You heal the mind. You don't cut the body. but when we're talking about gender-affirming care, all of this, the prescribing of the puberty blockers and the medical interventions and so on, it hasn't happened in a vacuum. It's happened in a much bigger context where, to begin with, these children are picking up these ideas from outside of the puberty blocker pathway. They're picking up these ideas from school, from education, from their peers, from media, from the propaganda that is absolutely everywhere. And talking about gender, this is something that's been coming for us for a long time, and that there's this conflation between sex and gender. My background is I'm a linguist, and the gender and sex are two terms that mean really different things. And so when we start talking about gender medicine, you're already going down a confusing path.
It's about the reclaiming of the language, isn't it?
It's about the reclaiming of the language and being really honest about that, you know. And I think it's disappointing that there hasn't been reference in the CAS report to the fact that, in fact, affirming these children is the first step. It's not about giving them puberty blockers first. You first have to actually agree that they have some sort of gender incongruity, which isn't accurate. They believe that they have been born in the wrong body, that their gendered soul is in the wrong sexed body. And that's a really important distinction for people to understand, that in fact gender in and of itself is a misnomer. And also that when we're talking about giving puberty blockers to children, we're not going to do this except in the context of research. What that says to me is that they're intending to still give these to vulnerable children to see if they can make it better. You know, I don't really understand why you would continue to give these drugs to children on any for any reason. You know, they're bad for them, and they're not necessary. The issue is about teaching parents that actually this is a social contagion, a really unhealthy social contagion that belongs to a set of ideologies, and that there is an agenda with a lot of money behind it. And this is what people don't want to talk about because they're scared. You know, they're scared to sound like they're talking about conspiracy theories or that they've got, you know, wandered off the path, but this is the truth, and everybody in this group knows that.
Yeah,
and so certainly, you know, Hilary Cass does as well.
Yeah, so I think we can all agree that this has been good first steps. So the report's great in terms of, as you said, giving permission to a lot of people who have been silent to actually speak up. So now that the CAS report is sending ripples through the UK and the EU as well, what's going on with our Ministry of Health? I do feel like it's a little bit like what Jacinda said once upon a time ago. In New Zealand, we like to do things differently. Bob?
Well, I think Jan already pointed to the fact that we're doing things very differently and very badly, especially in this area, based on what the CAS report said about PATHA. And you know, for people who aren't aware, PATHA is basically the little baby sister or brother of WPATH, which is the World Association, which has been fully debunked, and is the WPATH files, which have shown that even those within WPATH admit that children considering changing their sex are simply not at the age of consent to understand the consequences of their decision. And in fact, they even admit that the parents don't fully understand either when they're giving consent. So that sort of fully disclosed just the wild west of Western medicine, as they call it, that WPATH is doing, which is aided by PATHA. So in New Zealand, there's been a lot of pressure due to all the groups represented here and others. And so the Ministry of Health were doing a literature review to look at all the research. And then so the Ministry of Health, and then separate from that is Te Whatu Ora, which is the organisation that covers the DHBs. The 20 DHBs have all morphed into Te Whatu Ora, and it's kind of like the action arm of the Ministry of Health. So the Ministry of Health are doing the literature review, which was due this week, and then they were passing it over to Te Whatu Ora, and Te Whatu Ora were going to draw up the new guidelines. The problem was that Te Whatu Ora has contracted none other than PATHA to write up the guidelines, which is a bit like putting the fox in the hen house and saying, look after them. And so with the release of the CAS report, but also the new research out of Finland around the suicide trope, and also the research out of the Dutch research, which talks about children growing out of the gender dysphoria when they go through puberty, because puberty reaffirms their maleness or femaleness, as we all know. And so the review was supposed to come out this week from the Ministry of Health, but on Monday, very quietly, because it was only picked up by one media outlet, and that was Newstalk ZB, just one announcer, and I haven't seen a single peep of it anywhere else. And what the Ministry of Health says, just quoting, I want to update you on the timing of the puberty blockers evidence brief release. We had hoped to be in a position to release it this week. We now expect to release the brief along with our position statement in the very near future. The Ministry of Health is awaiting some final feedback on its position statement from key stakeholders. Read into that what you will. I suspect we all know who the stakeholders are. They'll be the ones that are pushing this agenda. And then it says, in addition, a considerable amount of new material was published in the UK last week. The Ministry is taking time to review this material against our own evidence brief for any new findings. Thanks for your ongoing patience. We know there is considerable public interest in this issue. I mean, there's you know, very near future, what does that mean? And key stakeholders, we are aware of the fact that there was a meeting between PATHA and Te Whatu Ora where they talked about this report coming out. Yeah, look, I think the Ministry of Health realise that they can't now put out a report that totally contravenes what the CAS report has said and what WPATH has been exposed with doing. And so there has been a tipping point reached, and I think we've got to really, you know, turn this Titanic around, because it's an absolute, well, juggernaut, Titanic, whatever you call it. It has been aided and abetted by dumb politicians, media with an agenda, pushing only one side of the debate. I mean, as we know, for example, Stuff admit out loud, they don't even make it subtle, that they will not present a contrary view to the trans agenda. Jan has successfully challenged their bias, but, and you know, Stuff even admit, and they're in their defense, if you can call it a defense, that the debate is over, and like climate change, the science is settled. It's just incredible arrogance by the media, and it's why their trust is going through the floor, and good job.
Yeah, I did a panel on that earlier in the week. So, Sarah, knowing a little bit about guidelines going to the Ministry of Health, do you smell panic?
Yes. Panic. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? How are we going to write this? I think it's really there's another truth that New Zealand is, if we're talking about capture, ideological capture, New Zealand's government has it bad. All of our officials and public policy, not all of them, but a significant portion of them are really on board with all of this. And it makes it very difficult. And I think that that England has, they've had a more successful, for whatever reason, and that's a different conversation, but they've been more successful at pushing back. Whereas other countries, including New Zealand, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand especially, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales are having a harder time. The rate of capture is higher. And certainly our Ministry of Health reflects that. They have a really hard time coming down with any kind of unequivocal statement. So, and, you know, they're working with a corrupt language code. So now they have to try and cobble together something that is going to keep the ideologues at the Ministry of Health happy, and provide a little sop to the rest of us out here, which is not good enough. It's time for them to stand up, our leaders, who, you know, those of them who don't actually believe this, and it's, you know, most of them don't, I don't think, the ones at the top level, and certainly in the new coalition government, they know what's going on. But, it's about politics and politicking and getting votes and keeping images going. And to my mind, that is not the appropriate behaviour for a high-level position of trust. And we put faith in these people to tell us the truth. And to be unequivocal when things are wrong. Mm. So, you know, I this whole, you know, we'll review our evidence base, you know, we'll compare and contrast and we'll have a little think about it. And, you know, that I drove past the Ministry of Health the other day and, you know, they're all in there in this building trying to figure it out how to make this work.
Mm. Well, it's nothing speak, really. I just want to go back to the engagement with stakeholders. Mm. I would have thought Genspect would be a stakeholder in this. Family First would be a stakeholder in this. Manawaheni Kōrero would be a stakeholder in this. Jan, have you had a call?
Not so far. I mean, I think that really is a serious part of the problem, and it doesn't just apply to the Ministry of Health. It's as if, I mean, I've written about this, about the capture of the New Zealand state that by gender theory or gender ideology. And it's amazing what a medium level of intimidation will do to achieve people to silence. It's been a very chastening experience for me to realise quite how much this whole sector is a bullying sector. You know, there are huge calls about vulnerability, but actually the people who speak for people with gender dysphoria or gender diversity or whatever you call it are highly, highly motivated to keep us quiet. And but I do think, as the others have alluded, that there is close to coming to an end now. But I did want to sort of mention a couple of things about the topic, which is that I'm a little bit to add to what Bob has said. I found out that the Ministry of Health only responded to one journalist who asked the question on the day that the release was expected to come out. So they didn't make a formal response, even though they previously let people know that there were delays. And another thing which I'd like to mention about the situation in New Zealand is that within 30 hours of the release of the CAS report, so a report on gender medicine in the UK that basically reins it in because there is little evidence for it, the people at PATHA had written a rebuttal to say that the CAS report would create harm to transgender people. And I want to call them on that because I think it's highly irresponsible to accuse a government inquiry that's taken this long and has used the best resources available of trying to cause harm to transgender people. And one of the main findings was that this is sort of laughable, really. There may be benefits to taking puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. There may be mood-enhancing benefits. But the trouble is, we don't know which people those benefits will apply to. Well, imagine making the same kind of assessment about heart disease or appendicitis. You know, we're going to give you prophylactics, but we don't know whether they're actually going to do anything. You know, it's just like, it's sort of very odd. I think that's probably all I want to say, really. But that's, the others have covered it very well. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Jen. So I want to take a look at where we're going to from here. And it was mentioned, Bob mentioned it, but we've seen now this CAS report, we've seen the WPATH files that have come out debunking so many of the myths that have been out there in the so-called gender medicine in inverted commas, the Finnish study debunking the suicides. There's been the Dutch information reports come out, which is ironic considering I think it was a Dutch protocol that started the puberty blockers to begin with. We've got the NHS stopping the recommendation for puberty blockers. There's so much beginning to happen. So has the CAS report in this entire sort of wider culture war, is it sort of the bouncing bombs that's going to break this dam? Are we going to see now in the wider pictures that I know you touched on, Sarah, in part one, do you think that this is now going to start at least discussions for this bigger, wider scope of reclaiming of language and actually talking about some of the bigger themes that are involved here?
I certainly hope so. I think it's becoming untenable for the media sphere in New Zealand, and I'll just keep it to our national situation, to continue to completely ignore us. You know, it's the word is getting out. But I'm not the Titanic or the big ship turning around is a good metaphor. But how I prefer to describe what I see happening is that, as opposed to the ship turning, I think it's more accurate to say that a real organized and effective resistance has actually built. And that's what we're seeing. You know, we're seeing these connections between individual groups that have been working on this in their own ways for several years or more. I know some of the groups out there have been working for up to 10 years on these issues, and certainly individual women have been doing it for longer than that. And that's how I think of it. I think of this as the CAS report as being a solid brick in the wall of resistance that has formed, an effective, organized, and informed resistance that can collaborate and work together as well as individually. And that's really positive. I'm really happy about that, you know, and I want that to continue to grow. Whether or not the ship has actually turned or stopped, I'm not entirely sure. And I think one of the issues that we face is that the ideologues, diversity, inclusivity, and equity ideologies or theories that come are so well funded. They have so much money, you know, and they've got senior people in very key positions that are powerful. And the other thing about this language and these ideas generally is that they play on really painful and important and powerful motivators for all of us. And just coming back to the suicide debunking, in New Zealand, this is a big deal. You know, we have one of the highest youth suicide rates in the world. Most of us know somebody. We've either lost somebody ourselves to suicide, or we know somebody who's lost a young person, a child, or someone they love to suicide. And it's really traumatic, and it's very frightening. And I think that people are also struggling generally in their lives, you know, just to keep food on the table, and they don't have a lot of space or time or energy to be really processing what's going on, and to be able to join a resistance. So in that way, I, yes and no, basically. I'm not convinced that the ship has turned, and I think that it's really important that we keep pushing back really fiercely and not go, oh, thank goodness, you know, there's some experts on at last, you know, with a report that people can believe. I don't think that's going to cut it. I think that, and I also know that the majority of the people are in fact the working class. And it's the majority of the people who need to stand up. It's never going to change if only a little bit, only a couple of people are talking about this. You know, this message needs to get to everyone. So there's that. And, you know, we're fighting on a lot of different fronts. And I know that, you know, it's not just the puberty blockers, it's then the cross-sex hormones, and then we've got people who are actively trying to lower the rate, the age of consent for surgeries. You know, we've seen no solid effort from the government, despite their promises of repealing the relationship sexuality education guidelines. So it's still being driven into our schools. You know, we've still got men in women's prisons. We've still got the Midwifery Council trying as hard as they can to delete women and babies from their scope, you know, from their practice. And we've still got men and women's sports and all of these things. You know, there's wins individually, but it's a small group of people who have limited resources trying to fight this behemoth that is global and has, you know, unique characteristics for each nation. So what works in one country might not necessarily work in another. And certainly for New Zealand, the suicide thing, the suicide trope that's been pushed has really hurt us and really hurt a lot of parents. You know, it's scared the absolute, you know, put the frightness on them. And I can really understand that. So, you know, there's that.
You're guardedly optimistic.
Guardedly optimistic, but I think that it's important that we keep going. And I know that, you know, I was just talking to Katrina Biggs earlier today, and she's been working on the Christchurch Lynwood swimming pool issue, where the pool, the council, you know, they've had meetings with the council and all sorts, and they're still refusing to deny men access to the women's swimming hour or the women's changing rooms, you know, and they've also, and I'll just get this right, because she's just sent me some really, information that the Christchurch City Council have made an overarching equity and inclusion policy for themselves, which includes the word gender as one of the categories included in it, but refused to include the word sex. And this is why it's a problem for gender and sex to be conflated like this. And that means that they've given themselves an excuse not to apply at Section 46 of the Human Rights Act, which is about being allowed to provide single-sex spaces. So, you know, they're actively, our local councils are actively rejecting government law legislation.
So really, in a way, what we're saying is we've won a bit of a battle, but we've certainly not won the war.
Yes, that's what you're saying, yeah.
So, Jan, you brought up a point in part two that actually brings into this that I want to unpick a little bit, and it was around in terms of trust in the people within doctors in the medical sphere. And I know one of the things that GenSpect has been doing has with some of the doctors that they have on board is often doctors or people in trust, whether they be doctors or therapists or people that who are having some forms of distress go to have been in a way, and in this country I know muzzled by the powers that be in the Ministry of Health or their governing bodies, whether that be the Medical Council et al. So how do we then, is that actually part of the problem too? I mean, how do we get that unmuzzling so New Zealanders actually get to hear both sides of the story and we restore, shock horror, dare I say it, trust and informed consent?
That you ask a very good question. And I think one of the effects of the CAS report is going to be that in future it's going to be extremely hard for any clinician, psychotherapist, counsellor to be assessed as behaving wrongly if they don't put a child onto sex and gender medicine, if they don't put them onto puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones, or even if they advise against social transition. And the reason for that is a lot of our health workforce are from overseas. A large proportion of that health workforce is from the UK. And if you're asking doctors, nurses, social workers, psychologists to do something here, which they are well aware of, that they would be subject to a career-ending criticism, or even a court case, if they were to do it in the UK, that's quite a big ask. So that's one way in which things are going to change. Another way, and this is a piece of good news, is that I think that my tenure as the spokesperson for GenSpect, I would be very surprised if I'm still that person in 6 months' time. I can't say for certain, of course, but I'm frequently contacted by people from various parts of the medical system who either want to support the work that we're doing or who just outline their very deep concerns about what's happening. And I can already call on well-informed and well-advised people who are very skillful and thoughtful about these issues. And that's a huge why I feel I can come and speak to you now, because of the quality of that of advice that I'm getting. But I think one of the really important things that is going to turn on is that in the immediate aftermath of the CAS report being released in the UK, both major parties immediately acknowledged that they would sign up to it. So not only the Conservative Party spokeswoman on health and social care, but also the Labour Party, shadow spokesperson, guy called Wes Streeting. He was in Parliament saying that any government that he was part of would adopt all of the recommendations of CAS, and even if the current government didn't. And I think that is a really significant pointer to politicians here, that although this is a topic and an issue that should be addressed at the medical level by clinicians and by good practices and by the use of evidence, the fact that the politicians are prepared to speak out about this is not insignificant, and hopefully that will have an effect here in New Zealand too.
Mm. Yeah, well said, Jan. Mm. So bring this home for me, Bob. You, in a way, have had a spotlight that you have been shining into the dark corners of New Zealand society to help save the crumbling, really, of our pillars like our families, like our faith, all of these areas. Do you look at this now? You did that wonderful report that I spoke to Tony Pitt about several months ago now, around the decriminalisation of prostitution. Are you seeing a possibility that there could be another report looming, particularly if the ministry drag their heels on this, and that we need something more, that people like you, like the team at Manawahine Kōrero or Jan at GenSpect, can take to our lawmakers to say, hey, this has got to stop, and actually get some things happening at a political level?
Well, I think the first thing to note is just that there has been a worldwide trend in terms of pushing back on this ideology. And so the list I have is Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, England, 23 US states have basically pressed the pause button or the stop button on transing minors. And that's primarily what we're looking at, is the under 18-year-olds chemicalising them and castrating them, and the social confusion, basically. Netherlands, France and Italy are all reviewing it at the moment. So these are not exactly conservative bastions, these are some of the most liberal countries. I mean, the Dutch Protocol came out of Netherlands and Norway, Sweden, Denmark and Finland. They're definitely not what you'd call conservative, very progressive, and yet they realise that things aren't right. So there's an international push. Now, from a New Zealand level, unfortunately, we have two big juddabars to get over. The first is that the, as Jan said, the professional association, a PAFA, is basically a bunch of activists. Virtually all of them are transgender themselves. One of them's doing an accounting degree. Another is with the Human Rights Commission. And basically, they are not a medical professional group. They are gender activists. But the second problem is that despite the fact that we have a government that's not going to push this material, there's two things to remember. Firstly, is that the birth certificates bill, which was passed into law 2 years ago, which basically means you can put whatever sex you want on your birth certificate, that was passed by 120 members of parliament. The whole of parliament was suckered into this gender confusion of birth certificates. The conversion therapy ban was all but 7 or 8 national MPs. And now you've actually got senior leadership in terms of Luxon and Willis, who have bought into the gender ideology, aren't that keen on pushing back on it. And the current Minister of Mental Health and Associate Minister of Health is Matt Doocy, who said during the second reading of the conversion therapy law that he can't wait until his children grow up and determine their gender. So you have got a centre-right government, which is clearly beholden to this ideology. So we have some work to do. My ears have pricked up during this conversation, mainly because both Jan and you, Marie, have mentioned about the fact that there are medical professionals willing to speak up. Professor Charlotte Paul from Otago University did an article in The Listener, was it 2 years ago, where she raised the red flag, and she said she was doing it because her colleagues were too scared to. I mean, that's a damning indictment on professionals to not be willing to speak up on something so serious. But it sounds like I know of a couple of paediatricians who would put their hand up, and I think that all of us groups actually need to have a little powwow and discuss an open letter with signatories of these medical professionals. You know, if they lock arms together, they'll get some courage off each other, because otherwise they were dead scared of being cancelled because of the cancel culture attitude of anybody who spoke up against it.
Oh, and it's not only the cancelling, Bob, it's the deregistration.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The medical council wield that like a sharp broadsword to any doctor in this country. It's disgusting, actually.
Yeah. And, well, I always say to people, you know, if you want to find out if the DEI policy, the diversity, equity and inclusion policy, is any good in your business, turn up and say that only women can get pregnant and see how diverse and inclusive they are. You'll quickly find out that it's anything but.
Yeah, exactly. So look, this has just been great, because we have to keep talking about this. And the most important thing for us to keep talking about it here at Reality Check Radio, we need to get back on the air. So if you haven't made a donation yet or haven't joined our Foundation Members Club, please do. Realitycheck.radio is where you'll find that information. There's also now information there about our plan forward. As I said in part one, I'm feeling optimistic now. I'm feeling more when, not if, which is great for the level of support that we've received. And it has been wonderful to be able to talk to you three about this. I've been talking to Sarah Henderson from Manawahine Kōrero, Jan Rivers from GenSpect, and of course Bob McCroskrie from Family First. And make sure you check out parts one and parts two, which have already been posted up here on our social media channels. With any luck, you guys, we will be back to be able to do these conversations in long format. I know this is just the beginning and there is so much more. And as you said, Sarah, we need to keep that resistance going. We need to keep the tension on that rubber band to make sure that, you know, we're not complacent with the little battles of that we've won. We need to make sure our voices are still heard. So thank you very much, guys. I do greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.